Lads.
Hey, hey.
What's up, boys?
Connie, what the fuck is going on, dude? You look like you've been in an underground bunker for the last week. Just kidding, bro. You're fucking fired.
Mahesh is just shitting on everybody because he got like a clean new haircut, and so he's just attacking everybody he can.
Man, it was Athena lot. You know, it's brutal out here.
That's I like it, man. That's very, very SF hipster at this point.
Fucking yeah, sick. I know. Yeah. Too many token launches.
Literally, you do too many token launches and your hair just starts standing up. It is that is the way it goes.
It either falls out or it just starts like gravitating upwards.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Neil, are we gonna get to see your pretty face?
Yes, we will. Just 1 second, guys. How's it going?
Hell yeah! Wow, that is a contrast to Ani.
some actual windows in that room.
I know.
Awesome. Guys, starting point. At the end of the day, AI coins are pumping. Things are mooning. BitTensor's down a little bit, but things are still fucking up in the sky. And then I look around a couple of days ago and I see Martin Shkreli hosting a fucking Spaces about BitTensor. I thought he was in jail.
Yeah, I guess he got out of jail and he's building an AI company now. And so I guess that gives him the ability to just shit on like everything that's happening within crypto that's related to AI. But it completely out of left field. I think this was Friday that Eric Wall just posted this like essay, which was essentially just like him shitting on BitTensor and saying that it was going to zero. And like I read through it and my initial thoughts was like, this guy has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. Like, there were just so many points in there. I was like, this is wrong. Like, I could tell that he sat down for like 3 hours and he was like, all right, I got it. I understand BitTensor. Like, let me write this tweet thread. And then out of nowhere, like Martin Shkreli like comes in like and just starts shitting on BitTensor as well. And they like kind of combine forces and like launch this Twitter Spaces. I wasn't there for like the first half of it, but the second half was just like Shkreli interrupting every 20 seconds and being like, how does BitTensor help my business today? And like the people that were building these subnets were like, man, like, I don't know. Like, sure, we don't have like a good inference product for you right now, but like we can do a lot of really cool other things. He's like, no. Like, how can it help today?
So do you think Matt has AI coins?
I was going to say our best analogy for, I think this, I'm sure you guys all saw Azeeb's blog post about, you know, inference and all of that. I think where people get it wrong is they're comparing JavaScript V1 to like JavaScript V6, right? Where JavaScript, when it came out, was like unusable. No one talked. It was just like kind of a scam. It was like, no one's going to use this thing. And then by V6, it was like, well, the train's left the station, right? It's like the engineer, the conductor, and the passenger all going to the same place at the same time. Which kind of seems like, you know, might be BitTensor in a few years, right? Like, who knows? And I think people conflate, like, the forest for the trees. Like, what it is right
now.
It could go, right?
That's a good analogy. It's a safe bet that Ani's got some AI coins in his back pocket, having just said that. Ani, what are you trading over here? Neil, you're next.
Well, you know, we have restrictions on PA. So, but obviously, I think... I mean, in other words, the question is like probably where are things most mispriced in liquid markets, right? And I know we talk about like all the big deep in projects and I guess like where we think they should be trading versus where they are. Like, it's quite crazy. Just I think someone had a tweet about this today where it might be Syncrasy talking about like ancient like Helium's narrative versus like what they're actually doing on the ground is incredible, right? Like, obviously not financial advice, but it's just like crazy how much they've done relative to like other crypto projects, right? Like, people actually use Helium, which in crypto is kind of a bad thing because it's like a real business, and then it's like, oh well, we can actually price this thing. But like, no, but seriously, right? It's like actual people in Miami using the stuff, and they're fighting against like the big MNOs, and it's incredible, right? Like, actual
Connor's on that shit over there.
I'm on it.
The thing about Helium that's always funny to me is it like almost suffers from actually being a business. It's like in crypto, it's like you kind of just need a meme coin with some projects. And it feels like all the DeFi stuff, people like actually spend time looking at the business and they're like, wait, this is an actual business. And, you know, it is what it is. So, but with that, Neil, are there any AI coins you're playing around with?
No, decline to comment on that one. The only ones I can go long on these days are the deep end stuff. Just keeping it in my own wheelhouse.
That checks out. Neil's a real entrepreneur in the deep end space, and he is probably the opposite of, you know, what a meme coin is today. So maybe let's use that as a transition point to get into it a little bit, Neil. You know, this isn't your first time on POC. Last time we had you was February 2023. Andreina was like really, really just starting out at that point, really early stage. You know, we rarely have guests back twice, but when we connected a few weeks ago, I was pretty blown away with the growth and some of the numbers that you were throwing out there. So, you know, maybe let's just start at a very high level on like the basic Web2 side of the business, and then we'll get into Dawn and all this interesting stuff you're doing there. What are the numbers? What's the growth like? What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, so the growth has been phenomenal in the sense that, you know, we were originally operating in just our backyard, New York, New Jersey, a little bit of PA, and, you know, did an expansion into Florida. But since then, we've now launched live into 10 states, and we're servicing, you know, about 10,000 households or customers of ours, built across a network of around 35,000 households, so that are actually using like our public Wi-Fi and things like that. So it's a network that's expanded across the country, and we're just looking to keep doing that more. And there's a lot of interesting kind of mechanics to how it manifested that way and ended up becoming a really bigger type network. But it's just kind of been demonstrating part of this idea that it's only been a matter of time until wireless is able to replace wireline networks. And we're just demonstrating that at an interesting scale.
Got it. Yeah, that makes total sense, Neil. It seems like it's going so fast. It's almost like one of those kinds of situations where everyone's looking around like, what are they doing differently? I guess would love if you could kind of talk about, you know, versus the rest of the market, kind of what are the two to three things that you guys think have really worked for you? I think, you know, you figured out financing early, which was a hard one in this market. You figured out the technological architecture early, which was also very hard in this market. But, you know, what else was really working to this point that that people might be interested in learning about?
Yeah, so the way that I'd say it is ultimately we focused on making sure that every bit of effort that we were spending at the company is really accretive to the underlying value of it. And so what that means is, you know, when we are thinking about how do we compensate our sales teams, it is coming down to like projects on an IRR basis. And so I'd say what has manifested here is we built technology that gives us a very cheap way of deploying internet in buildings, and making sure that we can effectively use that to drive the most contribution margin for the business has been what has been the biggest needle mover, because the entire company is aligned around these couple of major KPIs from a finance perspective that actually allow us to demonstrate that we're using our technology in the best possible way to grow it as much as quickly as we can. So it's, you know, simple business practices, right? You know, we've had a bunch of good advisors on the team that had said, hey, you know, this is the right way to think about it. And it's gone a long way in terms of helping steer this entire ship and aligning everybody behind that. And now we're just looking all across the country where it's a really good opportunity to be able to deploy solutions like these.
Yeah, no, that's awesome to hear. Neil, I've obviously been keeping up with you all's traction and progress. Still on the Web2 side of things, though, I think for our maybe traditional wireless or like traditional finance listeners, especially, like, you would categorize Andreina as a WISP, right? Like a wireless internet service provider.
It's a combination. Right? Yeah, it's a combination of things. So in the sense that we are a WISP in the sense that we build our own backhaul networks, just like another WISP. We are a managed service provider in the sense that we provide a better internet experience inside the multifamily buildings. And we're also a digital infrastructure company in the sense that the infrastructure that we're building is now a platform for other folks in the Deepin ecosystem. So I'd say we found this kind of nice Venn diagram where by doing one of them, you actually have a competitive advantage in the other ones as well. So, you know, I guess the sort of overall category is, I'd like to think about it, it's like an internet provider that does managed service, but is using that to build a new type of digital infrastructure.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I think that's helpful. And when you say, I think you said you're about at around 10,000 subscribers right now. Who are those subscribers? Like, what is that, the provision of kind of internet connectivity to them look like? Like, where's the backhaul? What type of sources are those? And then how does the end subscriber get kind of internet connectivity in their home or wherever they're at?
Yeah, and so that this is the interesting part of the internet supply chain that is really worth going deeper into. So the way, for you guys that don't know how internet providers typically work, you know, there's really kind of three major categories of internet providers. There's the tier one, tier twos, and the tier threes. The tier threes are the folks like us that are doing the last mile. You can think of like the tier ones as like the folks that are doing like subsea fiber optic cables that are interconnecting continents. And then there's this interesting category of the tier two internet provider, which is essentially interconnecting cloud facilities and data centers. And the point being is that if you can go to them and buy internet, you can buy it for incredibly cheap. Like, I don't know what you guys are all paying for your internet at home for a gigabit per second from Verizon or whoever that is, but you could easily be paying, you know, anywhere from $70, $80, $90 to $140 for your internet bill. But if you're able to go directly to the data centers, you can buy them from the tier twos for less than a dollar, you know, talking like 40, 50 cents for a gigabit per second. You just need to get them at the high enough volumes and buy them there. So there's an incredibly high margin to be made here. And that's really where it comes down to. If you can keep your build costs low, you can build these wireless networks cheaper than you can fiber networks, for example, it means that you can just offer people a cheaper internet solution. So Connor, to your point, what we do is we go to these data centers, we put antennas on top of their roofs, and then we beam them to create a mesh network in the last mile. And that means essentially putting an antenna on top of a multifamily building, a commercial building, et cetera, and then having our own proprietary system in the building that wires it up and allows residents to sign themselves up. And I'd say, you know, as we look at like what are the most successful wireless models that are out there, you know, the best one is like mobile service, right? You can just go to a store and buy your cell phone and it just works everywhere. The model that we've taken is how do you take that model and apply it towards your home internet where you just move into an apartment building, you go to our website and you're up and running with your own personal network that follows you around everywhere. That's the type of model that we've taken, is not only really using these cheaper backhaul networks that we're able to construct ourselves, but then a more convenient internet experience inside these multifamily buildings that gives the landlords and the residents something to be proud of from a connectivity standpoint that just makes their lives a lot easier. So I'd say that kind of covers the distribution side and then being able to provide a more convenient experience in the buildings.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And that's super helpful for me as like someone who lives in a large apartment building in Miami to think about like, what is my Wi-Fi router plugging into? Like, how does the Wi-Fi router work? It's because there's backhaul, you know, in the building that's probably wired up, could be by Andrina soon, but like, or a similar provider that's providing that connectivity. Okay.
So question there, Neil. So does my complex have to be connected like to Andrina's network in order for me as like a resident to opt in? Or could I have the option like as an individual to just leverage your service if I'm within that range?
Yeah, so today the answer is we have to get your network plugged in. But where we think about it from both, you know, Dawn and what we're building on the Web3 side, the idea is for you to be able to go direct so you can actually take direct ownership over your own network. So I'd say there's a lot to kind of jump into on that side. And today on the Web2 side, we focused working with complexes and building owners just because it's allowed us to scale a little bit more effectively. But as we think about the, you know, retail consumer, that's really where I think Web3 comes in and actually allows you to get yourself set up.
Yeah, Neil, I think maybe it might be good for you to talk about the distribution tailwind you picked up in the beginning, because I think, you know, as we see crypto today, I'm sure everyone else here agrees, like most companies in crypto rarely win because they have a tech advantage, right? Like in 99% of cases, it's like they figured out something very crafty with distribution. It might be like a vampire attack with supply or something like that, or like a really, you know, interesting distribution advantage they picked up online, whatever. But you have both the tech and the distribution. Maybe talk about that and I guess how that like segues into the crypto side.
Yeah, so on the distribution side, the real win for us has been working with multifamily building owners. Like going directly to the REITs, to the big owners that own a whole bunch of real estate, a single sale can get you into a whole bunch of different properties. But it's just a good way to aggregate essentially all of the demand. Like, you know, internet providers are some of the most hated folks in this country, unfortunately. And, you know, the building owners are aware of that. They're aware of how rough the experience is for their residents. Whether it's due to outages, whether it's having to do with tech troubles or, you know, faulty wires in their building, it's a bit of a headache. So multifamily building owners are now looking and saying, how can I use this as an opportunity to both solve my needs from an IoT and connectivity standpoint, but then also use that to help my residents out with a little bit of a better service too. So that's exactly the pitch that we've been doing going to these multifamily building owners. And that's essentially what's allowed us to really scale much faster, is rather than going door to door or worrying about individuals when, you know, having to deal with large amounts of coverage. If I can essentially aggregate all of the demand under one umbrella, that informs me on where I can build my network to go to service them, which is then a launch pad for future high margin solutions in the surrounding area. So that's really kind of been the trick to us, is just being able to go to these distribution channels that get us a whole bunch of units all in one go.
Yeah, I would also add, when I first found out about you guys, it was interesting back then because the internet is one of the few parts of modern life where it's like not really a political issue anymore. Like, if you're on the right, if you're on the left, you both kind of cash out. You cash out in the same place. So like horseshoe, you land at the same point, which is like cheaper internet is better. And like everyone wants like cheaper internet, right? Like no one really likes Verizon, AT&T, et cetera, to your point. But the other way I heard about it was the viral network effect I think you guys had with referrals, right? You gave people a referral program, and it was almost like akin to the early days of PayPal, where, you know, people were like having these like stimmy checks and they were like willing to give it out. Maybe you could talk more about that and like how I think that catalyzed the early network effect.
Yeah, and I think that example I think has just been emblematic of the fact that both real estate and is incredibly hyper connected. So by being able to incentivize some of the folks that are existing in your network, whether it's, you know, hopefully going to be through tokens or through some level of referral fee, has been very helpful for them to be able to spread that out. And I think as we've kind of realized the high margin of this, we've also been able to actually help people capture the recurring upside of that. So, you know, a model that we've done is, if, hey, your building is in a hyper connected area, we can actually cut you in on some of the revenue that we're getting because of how integral your building is for the rest of the network. So things like that have gone a long way towards getting people to be excited about what we're building, because we're just sharing in the value that we're creating here. But then on the second piece too is, you know, people talk in their own building, right? And the fact that we're able to give, you know, people referrals, hey, we'll get you a free month if you get your neighbor signed up. Stuff like that really goes a long way towards getting people activated for sure.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of these things we've talked about already, referrals, kind of the go-to-market and distribution, are very emblematic of kind of the Deepin playbook, I think a lot of us are familiar with. So I don't know if it's super public already. I think maybe there's been some teasers out about it on Twitter, but we're obviously here with you today, Neil, to talk about the launch of Dawn, the decentralized autonomous wireless network. So that's kind of the big news in the Andrina world that you've been working on. You're launching it as a Deepin with Andrina as one of the two kind of initial service providers. So maybe before we dive into what Dawn is, like, what motivated you to launch a Deepin? What was exciting about the Deepin model that you wanted to apply here?
Yeah, so I think it's a nuanced question, because there's really a kind of a couple major catalysts here, where the end vision of all of this is, how do I bring cheap internet to as many households as possible? Like, that is really the question that I've always been faced with. And working down the Deepin route is ultimately the fastest way to be able to do that. If I can actually leverage the end consumer to help me build out the network, that's going to be much faster than what I can do by myself. And as impressive as the growth has been in Andrina, it's still not as fast as I want, right? I want the technology that we have built, and, you know, we're obviously standing on the shoulders of giants from other manufacturers as well. I want to get that technology into every single household all across the market as fast as possible. It's just going to mean that people are going to be getting cheaper internet and better electronics in their home. And I think that's the type of Deepin future that we all believe in one way or another. So that is really the impetus here, is it just comes down to speed and being able to take this to as many homes as possible. And I think, you know, before we kind of go deeper into the Dawn category, one of the biggest impetuses for all of this is, a couple of years ago, the FCC released, you know, 1.2 gigahertz of 6 gigahertz spectrum. And that is such a huge asset for the last mile and for anybody who wants to build these networks, that it now gives us the ability to actually build multi-gigabit wireless networks in a mesh type fashion. That hasn't existed ever since. And the key part is, even though the FCC announced it a couple of years ago, the vendors literally started getting approved for this last week. And now that the vendors have this type of technology approved, and the fact that wireless can finally compete against wireline networks in a multi-gigabit way, it's just a question of how do you get this to as many people as fast as humanly possible. The unlock of the spectrum is a complete game changer for this type of thing. And now that we have the spectrum, we have the hardware that's cheaper than ever, we have the cheap wholesale internet, all of the ingredients are there to bring people incredibly cheap internet. And the vision that I have is at the data center, I'm paying 40 cents for internet, right, for a gigabit. Why can't the end household pay 40 cents for a gigabit? You know, the spread between wholesale and retail has to come down eventually. And I think this is sort of going to be the driving mechanism towards achieving that. And that's just the vision that I have. And I want to accelerate that process as fast as possible.
Right. And I mean, you've obviously been connecting, you know, connecting people, I guess, up to 10,000 subscribers with the Andrina business model. Like, how does the Dawn business model differ, or how does this network, you know, look like as a DPIN versus kind of the Web2 Andrina involvement, and what is the Andrina involvement too in that kind of future?
Let me start by actually talking about what Dawn is, and then we can kind of go down there. So at a high level, what Dawn is a protocol for building decentralized broadband. And the easiest mental model that I can give is to think about in the case of what Helium has done, right? Helium has provided decentralized mobile service. What we're gonna be providing is decentralized fixed service. So rather than internet for your mobile device, it's gonna be internet for your home or for your business. And there's a lot of interesting mechanisms behind this that I think make this a really good timing. But the end piece and the product that we're trying to push is the idea of being able to have every household can buy one of our routers, which you can think about it very similar to like a Starlink type installation. You have a home router and then a dish that goes on top of your roof. That entire package is going to be about, you know, trying to get it to $1,000, but we'll see. But you can imagine at enough volume getting it to $1,000, where you're then able to get access to this club of wholesale internet, where you're getting wholesale gigabit internet for like $10 per month rather than $100 per month. And so the idea is a consumer is going to be buying the infrastructure, throwing it on top of their roof, and getting access to cheap gigabit internet for the rest of their life. And ultimately, I don't mind doing that because, as I said, at the data center side, it's only costing 40 cents. And so, of course, it's still a very great margin solution, but everybody's saving in the process by actually being able to contribute to the infrastructure just a little bit, and in the process, reducing that spread between wholesale and retail pricing. And so that is the product that we're building here. A Starlink type installation for your home, a router and a wireless antenna that will automatically connect to our network and can actually give your excess capacity back to other consumers in the area. And so the mental model that I've been using to communicate with investors and early adopters here is think about what solar panels did for electricity for the third utility. A model like this is going to do to the fourth utility of internet, where a consumer finances their own infrastructure that gives them access to a hyper cheap resource and can even sell their excess capacity back to the grid. The part that makes this exciting is if you look at solar is like a 5 to 6 year payback. What if we can give this entire new way a 1 year payback? And that's really where I think things get quite interesting, is you have now a 1 year payback on owning your own internet infrastructure. And on top of that, you can also make a profit just by being able to give that excess capacity back to your grid. So I think there's a lot of fun angles we can dive into, but that's the high level category about what Dawn is. And Connor, I think you had another question if you want to ask the second piece of that again.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe just dive in real quick on that. I think that's a great explanation. I mean, so you're basically looking to empower small business owners, individuals, building owners to kind of step up and become Andrinas of their own in the sense that they're able to access internet connectivity at kind of wholesale cheaper prices and then use it for themselves and potentially also, you know, resell and create like a kind of mini ISP business for themselves. Is that right?
That's a one way to think about it in the sense that mechanically that's what it's going to be, but we want to encapsulate that entire scene to make it so that users can't think about it. Like my grandma that lives in Jersey City, I want her to be able to get a node. She can just throw it up in her home and doesn't even have to think about it. She just knows she's getting cheaper internet, but we are doing sort of this top-down push to bring all of the demand to her where she doesn't even think about it. So I think that's kind of one of the major findings of this is how do you wrap this entire infrastructure growth process in a way that is ultimately consumer friendly, where users don't have to think about it. So even though in effect it is essentially a peer-to-peer backhaul network is what we're building, the peer-to-peer aspect is fully encapsulated away from the user, where they're just seeing tokens come in, and that actually it ends up becoming a profit center for them.
Yeah. And maybe that leads into the, I guess, the follow-up question there, which was like, we've kind of got the compare contrast of Andrina and Dawn now. How do you see Andrina fitting into the kind of Dawn broader ecosystem going forward?
Yeah, so there's really two bits of kind of major interaction here. One is Andrina is going to be licensing our IP to the foundation. So in order for all of this network to really grow and operate, you need a couple of interesting automated components. So one good example of that, of what we built, is this robotic rooftop antenna system. We call it the ROS, the robotic antenna system. And it essentially means that a dish that goes on top of a roof can mechanically align itself. So it's a type of mechanical beamforming, just because the electrical beamforming is too expensive for this type of approach. But the whole point being is that you can now essentially have wireless that is fully automated. And that's IP that we have had to build as part of our core business, which is what allows us to grow cheaper all across the country, right? We don't have to worry about having expensive wireless technicians that are very specialized and are very expensive. We can have a generic third-party contractor install this. And so, one of the successful models is like the, TV antenna businesses, right? If you see dish TVs all across apartments on people's balconies or roofs, that being able to replicate that type of easy model is a core piece of this. So there's other things as well, like a cloud native router, our own wireless access point that is giving us Wi-Fi 6 at an order of magnitude of a cheaper price. There's a lot of these different components in this infrastructure rollout that we are providing to the foundation so that the end consumer can also realize the good unit economics and the automation that we have built as part of Andrina. That's the first piece on the IP side. And the second piece is Andrina is just going to be an early network operator. So as you kind of mentioned at the beginning of the call, is we're bringing together a consortium of internet providers, other folks that are like us that have seen the opportunity of being able to leverage cheap internet and to compete against some of the big guys. And we're putting them all under one umbrella and saying, hey, come join us. Let's pool together our infrastructure and be bigger and be able to actually compete against these big guys together. So that, I think, is a very ambitious vision of what we're putting together, is just trying to be one operator as part of a larger consortium. So every single network, every single building that we deploy from a Web 2 side is a nice Web 3 node to be able to provide additional coverage in the surrounding area.
For sure. And I mean, someone's got to do it initially, right? Someone's got to be pushing the kind of project forward. I think Helium kind of showed us how that was necessary, and a lot of other deepens as well, in terms of having like a first or initial service provider, or someone that's actually going out and doing some of the BD work and serving customers and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's the real thing I think here is some of these deepened projects just need to put their money where their mouth is, right? You have to go build out this network yourself sometimes and demonstrate that it is possible. And in the process, pull in other operators to help you do that and demonstrate that you're just one resource like them. And so I totally agree with that. And I think the fact that we have built a massive amount of supply, I think allows us to really go out to the market. And we've demonstrated the demand just from our core business. And so as everybody on the Deepend side looks like, hey, Deepend has proven that it can build out supply, what about the demand side? Our core Web2 business has demonstrated that there is demand for cheaper and more convenient internet. So ultimately, we're able to capture that. But then in the process of doing that, we have built out a network in, New York and Philadelphia, just to give you an example, that has line of sight to almost 3 million households now. And so the fact that day one on our protocol, we can sign up over 3 million households is like a huge thing, where not only is that going to be better for us getting this project off the ground, it's also going to be better for future token holders as well, because we don't need to incentivize as much supply early on to create a lot of value. So I think that is ultimately going to go a long way towards launching this network really effectively.
Yeah, no, love seeing more Deepens launch with line of sight to serious demand and revenues and getting that on chain. I want to talk about the token in a second, but just real quick before that, maybe a question for Ani here. Ani, you've been an investor of Neil's for probably, about over a year now. You've kind of seen the whole maturation and growth of Andrina and like the Web2 business. You've obviously gone super deep on DY, being friends with Mahesh and Sal. We're constantly espousing the virtues of decentralized wireless. So yeah, what have your takeaways or kind of exciting learnings been from like seeing Neil's business grow and then hearing about the launch of Dawn and kind of, you know, helping him think through what that could look like?
Yeah, I mean, I guess beyond the simple proselytizing the deep in faith, I mean, I would say Andrina is probably the most like empire-like project we've seen. When I say that, I kind of mean there's like so many moving parts to this thing that, you know, I think other people in this space overlook or they don't care about, but these are all essential in making like a 15 out of 10 experience, which is what I think Neil had and was on the path to having when we first met, but he certainly has it now. I mean, when you talk to people that are in a building that is Andrina, you can just see their eyes light up and they're like, wow, this thing actually works, right? And when, you know, we first started doing our DD, it was crazy to see people talk about the internet as if it was a new thing again. And I think that really is what crypto is trying to do in, you know, a broader sense. It's like crypto, in other words, is a unit of globalization. Bitcoin is like simply stranded gas emissions. But then fundamentally, we're combining atoms and bits with Deepin, right? And I think no other project does it better than Andrina. But really what's exciting, I think, is like we're seeing so many macro tailwinds kind of enter the space. Like, you know, I think one job for venture capitalists is like you invest in something that is a value bet, but you hope that it becomes growth over time. Like, you know, if we invest in value and then it remains value, you kind of have a problem, right, in a few years. But with something like this, it's like the Biden administration is keen to make the internet a defining part of its first administration, maybe in its second administration, if there is one, by working with lower income housing authorities, which Andrina has kind of been top shelf at. The second thing is like, you know, stepping back, like in the next 5 years as the IPO market reopens, what do we think is going to be the biggest IPO and route? I actually think it's going to be Starlink, right? And talking to a lot of the other investors in SpaceX over the years, it's like, you know, they are planning for a Starlink IPO and say, call it, I don't know, 2 to 3 years. When that does, that'll be the greatest IPO in the history of the world by an order of magnitude. It's probably going to go for like $1 trillion on launch. And like, if that happens, this market is busted wide open, right? And I don't think anyone is better prepared for that than Andrina. Like legacy incumbents are, you know, suffering Christensen's kind of disruptive innovation in the way that, you know, they just can't compete, right? It's the innovator's dilemma. In other words, we have the ability to be nimble, kind of like Tesla was in the early days. And I almost call Andrina, the Tesla story 2.0, the Tesla broadband, for that reason, where it's like we can just outmaneuver everyone. We have the federal government at our backs. This is an apolitical topic, right? You can be on the left or the right. You want cheaper internet. You don't want to increase, you know, shareholder margins for AT&T, especially as they got hacked, right? It's just like we have all the dominoes and they're all in place. And I think just seeing that in a year, when other people don't do anything in a year, especially in crypto, it's like absurd. So very excited.
Yeah, to your point, Ani, you talked about how there's like some political tailwinds, but also some like technological tailwinds, which are like specific applications and use cases that require like very low latent like bandwidth connections, such as like AI applications, cloud gaming. And so like there really is this push to, you know, your average person needing to upgrade their internet. And is the like value proposition here really that like these traditional internet service providers just can't offer the speeds that like users need at the price point that they're willing to pay for, just because of the like, you know, the technological innovations that Andrina has come up with, such as like the mechanical beamforming hardware and, you know, everything that's been developed on that front. So yeah, does it really just come down to like the technology that Andrina has and the ability to just like move so much faster without having to like, you know, lay down fiber cables and all this stuff, which will like, you know, give Andrina its edge?
Well, I would even take a step back before that and say, you know, as for all of us here, it's like, what is the holy grail of our business, right? I think if you think about it from first principles, it's like, how do we create new markets? I think that's why we all do this job, right? I think it's like too much of the economy is suffering this sort of sociopathic delusion of like 20% of the dollar goes to fintech. I think 40% is healthcare, right? That's like of every dollar that we spend, all these things are going to sclerotic businesses. The only way to fix that is by generating new markets. And so, you know, stepping back, I think what Andrina fundamentally is trying to do is create this new market around bandwidth, right? So Enron in 2001 was actually trying to do this. But then of course we all know what happened there, right? We all know what happened in that kind of era post Crypto.com when it was like everyone was dying just simply to survive, took like all the energy you had. But now it's a very different time, right? Like now, you know, everyone in that era who was burned has kind of left the stage. In this way, it's like the rise of edge computing. Obviously AI helps, but I mean, you know, we'll get into that. But I think a lot of it, of course, is there's a lot of hype in the space. But I mean, just looking at what we have on the ground, we could do this today. And I find that just enormously exciting, right? Like we don't need 5 other miracles to happen. We don't need like, the proliferation of Starlink to make this happen. You know, they say for every good business, you need at least one miracle. We had the miracle. Like I think Andreena's had the miracle it's needed to get over this hump. And for us, like the fact that we can buy very cheap wholesale bandwidth and resell it at a higher price for people in other parts of the country. Most of the earth is empty, right? Like what are we going to do when, you know, people are talking about Mars and all those things? Like this is like a fundamental problem to be solved before like that happens, right? Like how do you move information in a very high throughput way from A to B, right? And we could have solved this 20 years ago. We just chose not to. And now people are paying the price, especially as you know, the global arms race that's occurring, not just in Asia, but everywhere, right? There's like this revanchist sort of a narrative coming back, and like the only way to win that is to be better, faster, and cheaper with information, which is of course Andreena.
Yeah, and Sam, if I can give a little bit extra color there, I'd say the real kind of needle mover on all of this is what is the cost to be able to pass and the cost to cover a household or activate a household. So in typical TMT analysis, those are really the two numbers that drive everything. It's how many dollars you have to spend to be able to provide coverage to an individual household, and then how many dollars do I need to be able to activate that household. And when you look at the fiber model, you're spending thousands of dollars for both of those in scenario, right? Like, you know, some early reports on Verizon, it's anywhere from $2,500 to $4,000 combined to be able to activate and service a household. The fact that these wireless networks allow us to cover households for less than $10, but then service the household by finding a way to include that cost in an ultimately cost savings approach for the consumer is what really drives this. So ultimately, it's a fact that wireless has gotten so good over the past 20 years that it can now do a model like this. But then combined with the fact that the wholesale rates are so cheap that there's enough margin to be made is what allows it. So ultimately, it's just the fact that wireless has finally gotten a point where it's high performance enough to be able to compete against fiber. And it's much, much, much cheaper, over an order of magnitude cheaper, to be able to build this out. So that is really the kind of massive transition there.
Yeah, let me extrapolate what Neil said a little bit, because I think a lot of people probably won't understand, I think, the magnitude, which is like, if we were having this conversation 10 years from now, if you look around the world, the demographic situation is going to be horrific, right? Like already you look around, it's like South Korea has a TFR, total fertility rate of 0.68. They're gone within two generations, right? So it's like everywhere you go in Asia. So of course, for us, Dragonfly operates both in Asia and the West. We have an office in Singapore, so we're there like all the time. And we're seeing this stuff in real time where it's like, you know, the restaurant that was there for 20 years is now like mostly automated, right? And you see this just proliferating all over the place. In 10 years, as this gets even worse, I think you have whole new types of currencies that are required for, you know, robots, AI agents, all these things to flourish, right? So I think it was actually Mahesh who had the great line, which is, you know, the currencies of the future are compute, storage, and bandwidth, right? Because there's like no way in hell that AI agents or robots are using like fiat currency with bank accounts to transact. Like, how does it make sense, right? It's like, you have to wait.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
Wire, and then it's like, you know, even smart people are like, wait, so my wire came back, like, but I put the information. It's just like too much hassle for something that we're going to be in a world with Monad, you know, 10K TPS, like all these things are going to emerge, and it's like we're stuck in the 70s, right? Where we're still in the time of the petrodollar. What people don't realize is the biggest fundamental shift that Andreena unlocks is the rise of the electrodollar. And it's like finally having the ability to turn electricity into currency and then transact that in a very simple way. Because like I said before, 20% of the dollar is fintech, which means we spent 20% of every dollar on generating ones and zeros, moving ones and zeros, and then storing ones and zeros until now.
Love that. Neil, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, how you view the ecosystem developing. First question is kind of around, like, do you see any synergies between other DeepIn projects and Andreena? Like, I think initially we were talking about how, like, in the early days, it was Helium deployers that were deploying, like, a lot of... Oh, no, I think you guys were actually deploying a lot of Helium nodes. And like something I've been thinking about is that like one of the main critiques regarding Helium is that the backhaul is centralized, right? So like this wireless network is being built on top of like centralized ISPs essentially. And so something I've been just thinking about is how this could potentially be a way that like in how Helium could help decentralize their network even more by relying on like a decentralized backhaul network. So do you agree with that? And are there any other like synergies or, you know, ways that Deepins could utilize the network that you're thinking about?
Yeah, that's I think is the most kind of the most interesting question of all of this, because it harkens to a trend across all of digital infrastructure that I think is quite interesting here. So there's a lot to really say to that, but Sam, let me just answer your question in terms of the first piece of, you know, on Andrina, what we did is, you know, we were, I think at one point, the second largest deployer of the Helium 5G network during the Genesis phase. So, you know, we deployed close to around 250, if not, I think around 300 of their nodes. And during the IoT phase, ended up deploying close to 1,000 of those nodes. So we just leveraged our existing network at the multifamily properties to be able to be a platform for other Deepin type ecosystems. And we've done that with other technologies like Filecoin. We have done that with another company called Foam back within the days of Pollen as well. So we've really been leveraging this digital infrastructure, think about that Venn diagram, to be able to unlock a whole bunch of other things. On the Helium case, that's a great example too, because, you know, one of the things that, you know, fingers crossed it pans out well, I just don't know the answer of what's going to happen is, you know, they are technically not allowed to resell their internet in your home. You're technically violating your terms of service by going down that route. And so what they need aside from that is they have a decentralized access layer. What they need is a decentralized distribution layer. And that is what my hope for what Andrina is able to provide is, you know, as in a scenario where it's, you know, bandwidth, compute and storage are everything, in order to be able to leverage the rest of cloud, you need bandwidth that is actually decentralized as well. And that is what we aim to provide. So I'd say that is a huge plan of what we love is we'd love to be able to be the decentralized bandwidth that underpins all of this. So that is definitely the case. And the second point is like how, what are the other types of synergies that we have here is if you look in other telecommunications initiatives that have had a huge success story, one of those ones has been the growth of small cell through, you know, companies like Crown Castle is another good example. These guys have demonstrated that by building these smaller nodes that can be platforms for other types of telecommunications applications, you've been able to build a phenomenal business with that type of model. And so that is ultimately what we hope to be able to bring towards the end consumer here, the same way that we have hosted other types of technologies that are on there, like Helium, you know, Filecoin. We want to bring that same type of model towards the end consumer here. And the idea is for the end home to become essentially a small cell. What if a home could be a small cell for everything in telecom and cloud? And I think that's the part that is really quite interesting here is we are viewing cheap internet as kind of like a Trojan horse to bring a new type of digital infrastructure into the household in a profitable way that then unlocks the entire Deepin ecosystem for that end household. And so, you know, one of the things that I always think about here is like, we all know what the end state for Deepin is, right? We all think that there's just going to be these excess resources, bandwidth, compute, storage that are just everywhere. The real question that I like to ask is what's the business case that brings that into every single household? And the pitch that I'm making to all of you that are listening here is cheap internet is going to be that business model that brings all of these high quality resources into the end household. And part of what we're doing to really kind of part of what we're doing to be able to accelerate this is on the network on Dawn, there is a proof of backhaul that we have implemented with a couple of my former professors at Princeton to be able to actually provide this decentralized measure of that bandwidth, which hasn't existed in the past. And one of the major unlocks here is for the first time, we have a cryptographic way of knowing what is the actual bandwidth that somebody actually has on their home network to be able to validate that quality. And so now that you can validate that quality, you can then start providing services for everybody else in the Deepin ecosystem. And I guess the final kind of thing of what we're doing on that side is we're also bringing together a cloud native router. And so what that means is that a generic x86 router for the first time can actually perform home routing. at a high multi-gigabit capacity, thanks to technologies like DPDK and VPP. Point being is ultimately there's like this fusion between telecom and cloud happening before our eyes. And if we can use a profitable business model to drive that transition into the household, it can be a platform for everybody else. And so the most relatable example I can give you is imagine if everybody's Verizon and Comcast modem was replaced by a high performance x86 machine. Imagine how much value would be accruing to the individual household and how useful it can be in the overall cloud market. That, I think, is ultimately what this entire transformation gives us an opportunity to pursue here.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. Look, I think at the end of the day, I've always had this thesis, as Zani and many others, that like money is backed by commodities, and commodities are really what drives trade. Commodities are what drives growth, and commodities are kind of what drives, as he said earlier, empires to be built. And I think one of the things that's always excited me a ton about Andreena is the reliability at the end of the day. Like, you know, you have networks like Helium coming up that like you set up a bunch of nodes, you don't know a year and a half from now if they're going to be there. Personally, I think they're going to be there. But like when you look at the IoT network, sometimes it's a bit of a tough one. In your case, like you have these big hubs already that are like acting almost like generator centers for what you're trying to create that allows these spokes to then emerge where you can sort of take advantage of significant regional pricing differences that emerge as well. So to Ani's point, I mean, that was a big strategy Enron used in 2001 with Bandwidth, and one that was extremely profitable. It wasn't the thing that brought the business down. And personally, I've always thought it would come back. So this makes a lot of sense to me. Now, you know, something you mentioned earlier, Neil, that caught my excitement a little bit is WEN token.
So the token, we are shooting for a summer launch here. So right now we are doing everything from being able to demonstrate that, you know, our existing landlord partners can operate with the token. So a lot of interesting mechanics on that one, but we're just beginning to roll out our test net towards our existing customers and showing, hey, people are buying internet using our token. And, you know, exciting to report all of those fun updates, but ultimate timeline is shooting for a summer launch on our token.
That's awesome. Can you maybe talk us a little bit through, at least at a high level, kind of what do you see the token doing? You know, maybe break it down a little bit on the supply and demand use cases. I know payments is a big part within the ecosystem, as Ani mentioned, but any color you can provide us there and like how do we think about the token would be super helpful.
Yeah, so the token has multiple different major components. So I'd say it's very similar. Think about it in terms of, at least at a starting point, how you think about any DPIN project is first foremost, the token is going to be used to incentivize the creation of supply. By hosting a node and being able to provide coverage in a given area, you're going to be getting rewarded in tokens as a result for being able to help the network out in this fashion. And there's a lot of interesting mechanisms that we're applying as part of learning lessons from Helium. Like we have a proof of location service, so there is not going to be any gaming of the system. The value that a node provides to the network is going to be a very quantifiable and real number based on how many households you're covering. And there's going to be a proof of location mechanism to actually be able to validate that. That's on the first piece. The second piece, as Mahesh said, it's going to be used for actually transacting in bandwidth. You're going to be using these tokens to actually buy your internet. The third and fourth piece, I think, are where things get quite interesting, is that in every network, you have a level of coordination and scarce resources that you need. So a good example, and the most relatable example I can give you here, is on the coordination of frequencies, is that the frequency, you know, bandwidth, wireless bandwidth, at least, is in the public domain, right? But if every network operator is just stepping on each other's toes and using whatever frequency that they want, you're essentially just going to ruin the noise floor across your spectrum. And so part of what the token is going to be used in a staking-like mechanism is actually going to be able to get access to some of these scarce resources. And one of those good examples is frequency. So you can think about it as almost like a decentralized frequency auction in the unlicensed spectrum. And that's going to essentially allow this last mile mesh network to be able to collaborate, where essentially the community is going to be giving folks licensed access to unlicensed spectrum. So they're going to be an exclusive operator in that area to be able to preserve that wireless spectrum. And then the final use case for the token is going to be in like a work token like model. You can think of it similar to like Filecoin, where based on the actual bandwidth, based on the proof of backhaul, proof of bandwidth calculation, you're actually going to know what is an individual node's contribution to the overall network. So I'd say those are kind of the major pieces of it. It's one is incentivizing supply and actually transacting on the network. But then 3 and 4 is actually allowing us all to collaborate and coordinate on the network. And part of our engineering challenges is finding a way to encapsulate that away from the user, right? A node operator shouldn't have to think about, oh, which frequency is the right one for me to use here. But at the end of the day, these are all the types of dynamics you need in this type of bandwidth marketplace you're making, right? Frequency is our major resource, and we need to find a way to share that effectively. And that's really where the role of the token is going to come in.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think at the end of the day, there's a lot of different things being done here, and you kind of already have the demand ready to go, which is something that a lot of Web3 projects don't. So I think it'll be a pretty exciting outcome. Now, the last thing we want to do here very quickly is we love doing lightning rounds. So maybe I'll turn it over to Sammy for a sec to lead this one.
Yeah, so I got a few questions. Basically, I'll just give like a few words or a statement, and then you guys can each respond. So Martin Shkreli, we talked about him a little bit. Bullish or bearish? Ani, I'm just going to hit you with these questions first, and then Mahesh will do Neil.
No, Martin has a dog in him. Still bullish. I mean, like I still see him at the DeSci NYC event. So he's, just you can't take him out of the game.
Yep, agree. All right, for your favorite live AI coin. So it can't be one that doesn't have a token yet.
No token right now?
No, it has, like, the token has to be trading.
OLAS, I think. It's probably
OLAS. It's a good pick. Yeah. What use case or vertical do you think is going to onboard the masses this cycle? Like, is it going to be decentralized social? Is it going to be Deepin? What do you think?
I mean, if I just have to, you know, get rid of like what I would like, and I think what's actually in the data, it's probably stables. I mean, just like we were talking about the lab stuff today. I guess whenever people listen to this, it's going to be farther ahead in the future. But today is like the Athena Labs launch, right? I've never seen so much hype for something this cycle so far. It's been like really absurd. And simply, you know, they're tokenizing cash and carry trade, but just to have that hype for something that, you know, is in some sense a synthetic dollar, it's crazy, right? Like people are like desperate for this stuff. I think it's only going to get worse as you have more and more euro dollar shortages globally. So
yeah, I think you could argue that stable coins are the only real use case within crypto or product that's found product market fit so far. And then lastly, you know, I think this was about a month ago, AT&T's network had a massive outage. What do you think that was? Was that a nation state attacking the network? Was it aliens? What was it?
Occam's razor probably says that it's incompetence, right?
I mean, that's not the answer Mahesh wanted to hear. He wanted to hear aliens.
Right. I would love for it to be like a nation state. I mean, I think, you know, I don't know how much you guys have looked into this, but I have a friend that kind of runs a cybersecurity firm kind of for industrial sites. So they're protecting sites from getting hacked, supposedly, like this. And he said like the frequency of people getting hacked in this way over the past 2 years is greater than all other, like the past quarter century combined. And so it's like, something is like definitely happening, but like there's this, it's not in the Overton window, right? Like people just don't want to think about, oh, my bridges are going down and like industrial capacity and every sense of the world is declining, right? So. But it's probably incompetence, given it's AT&T. I really wish it wasn't, but it's,
Fair. All right, Mahesh, over to you.
That's a great answer. Okay, so Neil, we're going to do lightning round next. It's going to be pretty similar, and I'm going to start you with the same thing, which is AT&T. What do we think?
My big fan is Cosmic Rays. Cosmic Rays are coming in and flipping a lot of bits, and we don't know what to do. We don't know what to make about it. That'd be the silly answer.
Fair enough. That's a new one. Okay, aliens, yes or no?
Yes, totally.
Any follow-up to that, or it's just a straight-up yes?
Just a straight-up yes. Take it for what you want.
I love that. Caldera, what do we think of it as a chain?
Amazing chain. I mean, the founders at the team are absolutely incredible. I love the work that they've done, and they understand the space really well, and they know exactly what it takes to help bring more people in the ecosystem. So stuff like that makes life so much easier for folks.
Last one, AIX Deepin.
That one is a fun one because this is a little bit less of a lightning round question. The way that I think about it is there are two major types of AI training. you know, you have sort of the high performance footprint where they need to be close to the end user, and then you have the place where you need training to take place. I think DPIN is going to be an incredible accelerant for all the types of footprints that are actually going to be able to utilize this for training. And that I think is going to be a really cool feature. The fact that an end household can actually contribute to training of models, that is the kind of stuff that I love to see. So really cool behind that.
That's awesome. Yeah, look, I think that let's wrap up the lightning round at that. I have one last question for you, Neil, which is that you have a lot of investors out there that are looking at Andreina, comparing it to Helium and saying, this is really cool. You have a lot of other investors out there that are looking at Andreina and what it's doing and comparing it to things out there like AI, like a lot of the newer technologies that are coming to market that need to be supported by, as you mentioned yourself, massive commodity loads themselves. How should an investor be thinking about Andreina going into your token launch? And what are the couple of things you might flag for investor to really pay attention to when they're looking at potentially investing in your company?
So what I would say is a couple of different dimensions on there. So the one I would say is, and this is, I think, my kind of lens for evaluating DPIN projects, is consider to what extent they need to borrow from the future to be able to provide utility to the consumers. And what that ultimately means is, you know, there's a bunch of good examples where you need to create a massive amount of supply before an end consumer can realize utility. And that, I think, is kind of, you know, hard to fully calibrate how much, but it ends up being able to demonstrating to what extent before you're going to be able to get a foothold in your end consumer demographic here. And I think in Andreina, what is special is we don't really have that cold start or chicken and egg problem. You just need one node with excess bandwidth, and that can provide immediate value to the end consumer. So I'd say whether it's us or other DPIN projects that have those types of features built into it, just allow you to be able to de-risk your investment and understand what are the ones projects that you want to go align really well, because the real, you know, holy grail is just being able to get users and being able to get consumers using that. And if you could be able to have, you know, a low variance in terms of the outcome based on how value is being able to be provided to consumers, that I think is really the main piece. And then the second piece, as I would say about the Andreina side of stuff, is, you know, listen to the message of what I'm saying about, you know, this sort of DPIN vision. And ask yourself if you think it's inevitable. If you think and you believe what everybody here believes about DPIN, that it's all going towards this commoditization of these resources, ask yourself, how does it actually happen? And then look at the companies that are actually the ones that are able to actually deliver on that and provide a tangible, concrete business path by which that profitable transformation happens. So that's the message I got as you look at Andreina.
Got it. Makes a lot of sense. Anything, Ani?
Yeah, I would also add that, like, you know, crypto is so full of hucksters and P.T. Barnum types that people should just think about it from first principles, right? And they should look at the revenue that's going to be on chain and just talk to people that have used the product, right? And in fact, that's how we got a lot of the cap table sorted, where it's like, I don't want to name names, but like a bunch of people on the cap table were like, oh, my building has Andreina. What's going on here? And then Neil explains a vision and they're like, holy crap, this is like actually, like crypto is being used for this. Like, it's just a weird, as crypto investors are like, wait, that's kind of wonky, right? Like, what's actually going on here? So yeah, I would tell people to think from first principles. And I think we do have a head start, just given, you know, it took Helium 13 years to get to this point, right? And to their credit, they did it in a time where nobody, yeah, like around there, right? I mean, it's taken about a decade, but you place that trajectory and you play something like this, and it's almost like the difference between how fast Ethereum wallet addresses have grown versus Solana wallet addresses, right? So it's like a power law within a power law. And that's our business. It's to find these enormous power laws that other people have overlooked in verticals that they don't understand or just can't, right? And I think that's how we all ended up here, of just like, oh, maybe crypto is actually the best vehicle to take Andreina to the next level. And so here we are.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I've always loved, within neuroscience, this idea of emergent properties, the idea that unless something is in its perfect configuration already, spontaneous new things can emerge when that happens. And one of the things I love about DPIN and what Neil, you're doing in particular, as you kind of said yourself, is what you're doing will itself bring a lot of underlying use cases that don't exist today. It's infrastructure that needs to be stood up if we're going to continue on the path to hyperintelligence that, you know, we really think that we're on right now. And I, in particular, am super excited to see how Andrina grows and is able to contribute to that in the short term and in the long term. And I'm super excited to sort of see where you go for the rest of the year. So, guys, with that, this has been awesome. Do you want to maybe just quickly tell our listeners where they can find you on Twitter, or, you know, where they can find learn more about kind of what you guys are doing, starting with Ani and then Tamil?
Yeah, you probably best to DM me on Twitter. It's Ani, A-N-I underscore P-A-I.
Ani's trying to get deals. Neil.
Same thing for me, guys. At NeilC underscore Don. You can find me on Twitter, and we're just going to be ramping up our presence quite a lot over the next couple of months. So if you want to learn more about the great technology behind it and the business trends and all that kind of stuff, tune right in, and we're going to have a lot of fun stuff for everybody.
Should they DM you too?
Definitely DM me. That's definitely the answer.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome, guys. Well, look, I've really appreciated this. This has been a great episode, and look forward to kind of seeing how all of this goes over the next year. I'm really excited for it. And NFA EV3 is an investor in Andrina, as is Dragonfly. So just take that into account when you're listening to this podcast. Anyway, guys, thanks so much.